George Bailey wished he had never been born. And he got his wish. And he got to see what his town, Bedford Falls, became without him. And Bedford Falls became Pottersville, named after his nemesis, Mr. Potter. So try to think of those. If you're familiar with the movie It's a Wonderful Life, which would you prefer? Bedford Falls, a quiet little mountain village, or what you saw there, Pottersville? Would you like something that is light, or do you like the dark? What do you have to do to make a room dark? Remove the light. And if we remove the light, things get very dark. That's the concept we're looking at. But here's the specific topic for this morning: serving in government. Being in the government and being in politics is dirty, and good people should stay away. Who said that? Crooked, immoral people who want control, and people they have convinced. And so what happens when you take light out of the room? It gets dark, and you're uncomfortable with the light being around. As we saw last week, our Constitution incorporated biblical principles, but it fails if only pagan liars, cheats, and thieves run the government. 55 out of 56 of the signers of the Constitution were Bible-believing, church-attending Christians. John Adams said, "Our Constitution was made only for a moral and religious people. It is wholly inadequate for the government of any other." And so, should believers, followers of Jesus, be a part of government? So, to deal with that topic, we're going to take a look at three people who served in the government over various times. The first one we're going to take a look at is a guy named Joseph. Joseph had dreams. Joseph loved his dreams because he was one of the youngest of his siblings, and he had a dream that all his older brothers were going to bow down to him. And if you were a younger brother, and if you could rub your older brother's nose in something, would you do that? Of course you would do that. And he enjoyed doing that, but strange as it may seem, his older brothers did not like that. And they responded by hating their younger brother. And eventually, instead of killing him, they sold him into slavery. But God was with him when he was in slavery, and he excelled in everything he did. He was in charge of his master's household. And everything was going well until his master's wife started looking at him and saying, And she started making advances to Joseph, and he always said no. And then one time, there was nobody else in the house, and she grabbed him and said, "Come to bed with me," and he said no, and he left, took off, and she had a hold of his coat, and she said, "Look, this is the coat. He tried to rape me," she told her husband, to save face. And so Joseph was thrown in prison. And even in prison, did he mope around and whine and complain? No. In prison, God was with him. He basically ran the prison. Wherever this guy went, things went well. And so he cared for people in the prison. And God helped him interpret the dreams of Pharaoh's officials, but they forgot about him until Pharaoh had a dream. So Joseph was kind of an instant leader from outward perspective. He was a son, he was a slave, he was a prisoner, and then boom, he was number two in all of Egypt. Genesis 41, starting in verse 37. Joseph's suggestions were well received by Pharaoh and his officials as he had interpreted Pharaoh's dreams. So Pharaoh asked his officials, "Can we find anyone like this man so obviously filled with the Spirit of God?" Then Pharaoh said to Joseph, "Since God has revealed the meaning of the dreams to you, clearly no one is as intelligent or wise as you are. You will be in charge of my court, and all my people will take orders from you. Only I, sitting on the throne, will have a rank higher than yours." Pharaoh said to Joseph, "I hereby put you in charge of the entire land of Egypt." Then Pharaoh removed the signet ring from his hand. What is a signet ring? It was the credit card for all of Egypt. It was the law for all of Egypt. How would they pass a law? They would write something down, and they would drip wax on it, and then you would push Pharaoh's signet ring into the wet wax, and it would make a mark. And wherever that was Pharaoh's signature. And Pharaoh gave Joseph his signature. It was amazing. "Only I, sitting on my throne, will have a higher rank." And he put him in charge of the entire land of Egypt. Then Pharaoh removed the signet ring and placed it on Joseph's finger. He dressed him in fine linen clothing and gave him a gold chain around his neck. He was in charge of tax policy, land acquisition, asset manager. So what can we learn from this? First thing I see is grow in life's difficulties. Grow in life's difficulties. When life is good, climb higher. When life is hard, grow stronger. It isn't important what happens to you. None of us would throw any stones at Joseph if he sat in the corner, sucked his thumb, and whined and complained. What happened to Joseph was not fair. It wasn't right. But he didn't sit in the corner and suck his thumb and whine and complain. He grew through everything that happened. How do we respond to the things that happen to us? Grow, and then secondly, serve others. Have you ever been in the pit of despair and then someone needs help? The tendency is, yeah, go help yourself, right? No, I got enough to deal with, go away. That is the tendency, but that's not what Joseph did. He did the exact opposite. He served them. He served where he was needed. He noticed as the Pharaoh's officials were in prison that one day they looked sad. And he asked them about it. It's not recorded that anybody went up to Joseph and said, "Joseph, why are you sad?" In his despair, he saw the needs around him and he asked them, and he interpreted their dreams. And so after he interpreted their dreams, one of them got out and the other one died. And he said, remember me, tell Pharaoh about me. And guess what they did? They forgot. He forgot. How long did they forget? Genesis 41, 1. 2 full years later. Are you kidding me? Can you imagine how excruciating that waiting process was? You wake up every day thinking, maybe today, maybe today, maybe it's today that they'll remember. Maybe, maybe. And the end of the day, nope, not today. Doing that for 2 full years. That's Joseph's life, waiting. Wait on God's timing. Wait on God's timing. Keep growing, keep serving. Waiting is one of God's favorite tools for refining us. So, grow, serve, and wait on God's timing. Because that refines us. Let me tell you a story. Imagine you're driving all day, and you've been, you know, you had a few things to snack on throughout the day. You're driving, and you think, you know what? We've got a Ruth Chris gift card. Do I have your attention? I got a Ruth Chris gift card, and your wife checks, and sure enough, there's one about an hour and a half down the road. Are you kidding? So you guys go ahead and you place your order at Ruth Chris, right? And your favorite meal at Ruth Chris is going to be waiting for you when you get there. And as you're driving along, you see a big billboard with a Big Mac on it. Does that tempt you? Sure. Does that look good? Sure. Are you going to stop and get one? No. Why? Because you've got Ruth Chris ahead of you, right? And then you see a big billboard for Dairy Queen. Do you stop for Dairy Queen? No, because you're headed for Ruth Chris. And then you see Taco Bell. And they got a sale going on. Do you stop? No, because you're headed for Ruth. You're waiting. You're waiting for the best. That's Joseph. That's Joseph. That's what God calls us to do. There are things we don't get involved in. Not that they're evil, but we're waiting for the best. We're waiting for the best. That's Joseph. He was involved in the government, and he had a huge impact. Let's take a look at Daniel. Daniel, that was a different kind of leadership. That was compelled leadership. That was basically a gun to the head. Hey, Daniel, how would you like to serve in the government or die? It's up to you. Your choice. They picked the best. A lot of the people that Daniel knew were killed. And so he had the opportunity to go and serve in the government, which he did. And he was taken by force to a land in a foreign country. And he wasn't treated well. His boss was the king of the eunuchs, was in charge of the eunuchs, which made Daniel what? A eunuch. Which means they performed a little surgery on Daniel, and he was castrated so that he wouldn't be interested in girls and be sidetracked. Are you kidding me? He was taken by force out of his country to serve someone he didn't like, and they did that to him. All God's people said, ouch. Right? Daniel chapter 1, verse 19. The king talked with them, and no one impressed them as much as Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. So they entered into royal service. Whenever the king consulted them in any matter requiring wisdom and balanced judgment, he found them 10 times more capable than any other magicians and enchanters in his entire kingdom. Daniel remained in the royal service until the first year of the reign of King Cyrus. So, what do we learn from Daniel? Excel in a hostile environment. I don't know. Have any of you ever had a bad boss? Yeah. Me too. Guess what? Daniel did too. Daniel did too. Things were difficult for him. And later on in his time there, all the other guys were mad at Daniel because he was doing so well. And the king was always listening to him. And so they're like, here's this plot. We'll ask the king to pass this law that no one can pray to anyone but the king for 30 days. Because they saw that Daniel was a man of prayer. So they passed that law. And they said, no prayer to anyone for 30 days except to the king. Daniel continued to pray near his window where they could see him. He continued to pray out loud near his window. Could Daniel have prayed silently in his basement? Yes, he could have prayed silently in his basement. And he could have cowered in fear. But he didn't do that. Mediocre effectiveness is one way to fly under the radar. And excelling in the way God made you is risky. And you will be attacked in one way, shape, or form. So we need to defend your credibility from compromise. Daniel didn't stop praying. He kept praying, and he kept praying publicly, and he went into the lion's den. And in the lion's den, God came to his defense and closed the mouths of the lions. Listen to me. If you give up your credibility for peace, you will have neither. If you give up your credibility to make peace in a situation, you will have neither peace nor credibility. Daniel didn't do that. He didn't do that. He continued to be bold. There's a man named John Maxwell. I don't know if you've heard of John. John was a pastor. Now he's a teacher on leadership. When he was a pastor, he was meeting with three other pastors in this restaurant, and there are a lot of people in this restaurant for breakfast. And so the other pastor said, let's just pray quietly to ourselves, okay? Let's just pray quietly to ourselves. And that made John mad. So John stood up in the restaurant, and to the entire restaurant, he said, could I have your attention, please? We're going to pray here, and I wonder if we could all pray together. And John led them in this prayer, and he thanked God for the food, and he prayed, you know, like a pastor would pray. And he sat down. He did that basically to shame the other three pastors he was with. But here's the cool thing that happened. At the next table was a young couple, newly married. And they said, hey, can we talk to you? And John ended up having breakfast with them and led them to the Lord during breakfast. Be bold. Be bold. Don't give in to compromise. And then the other thing I see with Daniel is serve with flexibility. He served under three different kings, and each situation was completely different. Don't become rigid. We only do things this way. Right? And we're comfortable with the things we're comfortable with, right? And we do things a certain way. Just like this lady, she was getting ready to cook a roast. She cut the end off of it and threw it away. And then she put it in the oven. Her daughter said, why'd you do that? My mom always did that. Why'd your mom do that? I don't know. So she called her mom. Mom, you always cut the end off the roast. Why do you do that? I said, I don't know. That's what grandma always did. So they called grandma. He said, why did you cut the end off the roast? Oh, she said, my oven was too small. We keep doing stuff and we don't know why we're doing it. Daniel was flexible. In three completely different kingdoms, he was flexible. So now, talked about Joseph, Daniel. Let's talk about a lady. Let's talk about Esther. Esther. She had a different kind of leadership. She was a trophy leader. She was chosen because she was pretty. But here's the question. Was she more than just a pretty face? Esther, chapter 2, verse 10. Esther had not told anybody of her nationality. She was a Jew. And her family background, because Mordecai had directed her not to do so. Every day, Mordecai would take a walk near the courtyard of the harem to find out about Esther and what was happening to her. So, where they were Jews, they were a minority, they were captive there, and Mordecai, Esther's parents were apparently killed when they were taken captive. And so Mordecai was her closest relative. And so whatever he told her, that is what she did. She listened to him. Listen to your authorities. Listen to your authorities. Esther was marching off the map. Esther was doing things that had never been done before. And so what do you do when you're marching off the map, when you're doing something that nobody has ever done before? You have to lean on someone else. And that's what she did. She leaned on Mordecai. Verse 16 of Esther 2. Esther was taken to King Xerxes at the royal palace in the early winter of the seventh year of his reign. And the king loved Esther more than any other of the young women. And he was delighted with her that he set her on the royal crown on her head and declared her queen instead of Vashti. Vashti was the other queen that had disobeyed the order of the king. Here was this captive Jew that's now queen. Trust the sovereignty of God. Trust the sovereignty of God. God is seeing our lives from 10 years from now and from 20 years ago, from all kinds of different angles. God is looking at our lives, and he's got things prepared that we have no idea that they're coming down the pike, but God does. I mean, I can look back at my life, and I can see how things had fallen into place now, looking back. But from the other perspective, it seemed like there was nothing happening. We look back, we can see the sovereignty of God. And so what we need to do is take that 20/20 hindsight and by faith turn that around and say, God, I don't know what you're doing, but I trust you. And that's trusting the sovereignty of God. And Esther did that. But there was a guy, Haman. And Haman was trying to destroy all of the Jews because he had been slighted by somebody that wouldn't bow down. And so he had a plot to destroy all the Jews in that entire kingdom. Esther chapter 4, starting at verse 12. When Esther's words reported to Mordecai, he sent back this answer. Do not think that because you are in the king's house, you alone of all the Jews will escape. For if you remain silent at this time, relief and deliverance for the Jews will arise from another place. You hear how Mordecai understood the sovereignty of God, but you and your father's family will perish. And who knows but that you have come to royal position for such a time as this. This is your moment. This is your moment that you were here for. Then Esther sent this reply to Mordecai, "Go gather all the Jews who are in Susa and fast for me. Do not eat or drink for 3 days, night or day. I and my maids will fast as you do. When this is done, I will go to the king, even though it is what? Against the law. If the king doesn't extend his scepter to her, she is killed immediately. No ifs, ands, or buts. Even though it is against the law, and if I perish, I perish." Wow. So Esther was more than just a pretty face. This is a woman with character and integrity and courage. Risk everything for others. I love this story. If you haven't read the story of Esther, oh, it's a wonderful story with all kinds of plot twists going this way and that way. But suffice it to say that the one person that tried to destroy the Jews was destroyed. And a captive Jew was the queen, and the Jews prevailed in the end. Then at the very end, notice this passage. I never noticed this before. Esther chapter 10, starting in verse 1. Then King Xerxes imposed a tribute throughout the empire, even to the distant coastlands. His great achievements and the full account of his greatness of Mordecai, whom the king had promoted, are recorded in the book of the history of the kings of Media and Persia. Mordecai the Jew became the prime minister with the authority next to that of King Xerxes himself. He was very great among the Jews, who held him in high esteem, because he continued to work for the good of the people and to speak up for the welfare of all of their descendants. So this is the book of Esther. And Esther was like the hero of this book, except who gets the greatest honor in the end? Mordecai. Her cousin, her uncle, her relative. What's the point? Serve unselfishly. Esther was unselfish. Esther said, yes, he can get honor. And she allowed him to get honor. She didn't go say, well, what about me? What about me? What about me? That's not fair. You ever said that? Me too. She didn't say that. No jealousy. That's cool. Let me tell you a story about a guy named Micah. Micah was a worship leader. He was a campus pastor, served as a part of a large church. And he had a conversation with a kid, and the kid spouted off this stupid stuff. And he said, where did you hear that? Well, that's what I learned at school. Well, that's ridiculous. And he said, Micah said, I got to do something about this. Well, what can I do? What can I do? And so he started talking to various people, and he found out that it was fairly simple to become an Indiana delegate to the state convention. And so he went to the county clerk, and he filed for that. And then he immediately forgot that he did that. He did that in January. And in November, somebody texted him and said, hey, I voted for you today. And he thought it was a joke. Until he went to vote, and he saw his name on the ballot, and he remembered, oh yeah, I filed for that. So apparently he didn't have a really big campaign. So he, at the end of the day, in his county, I think there were like 15 spots available for the delegate. And there were 17 people that ran, and he won. And he went to the state convention later that year, or the next year. And he learned that he could really make a difference from that point. And so he got a hold of other churches. And he said, have your people become Indiana delegates to the state convention. And okay. And a number of churches did that. I think the number is 72 people became delegates in various churches that he had contacted. And so what do the state delegates do? They vote on the position of that particular party, whichever party, both parties have the convention. And then they nominate their lieutenant governor. Lieutenant governors do not go through the primary process. They're nominated there. And so Micah was nominated for lieutenant governor of the state of Indiana. And guess what? He won. He won by 72 delegates. The number that he had recruited. This is Micah. Next slide. Is it in there? Micah Beckwith, lieutenant governor for the state of Indiana. He's still a pastor. But he's serving to make a difference. I don't know if that's a way you can get involved. I mention that as a possibility. If God lays it on your heart and says, hey, I should do something. You know, I've talked about, I don't like the way this is going on. Run for school board. Run for a position on the county council. Find a way to make a difference, to be light. What happens to Bedford Falls when you take out the light? It becomes Pottersville. By the way, since I started with It's a Wonderful Life, a clip from that movie. Do you know why that movie was made? The movie was made because Frank Capra heard this comment. And that comment just stuck in his brain. And he said, I have to figure out a story that can share that I can use to tell people about the power of that comment. And he heard this story, and he modified this story to be able to share. The concept that he got stuck in his head were words spoken by Jesus. You are the light of the world. That was the reason behind. And that movie is a way for Frank Capra to illustrate that one point. Who's the light of the world? You are. You are. Who's the light of Kosciuszko County? You are. And so wherever we are, use our influence to shine light. Here's the bottom line. Use the influence you have to spread the light. Darkness is the absence of light. Where do you want to live? Bedford Falls or Pottersville? Where do you want your kids to live? Bedford Falls or Pottersville? What do you want to leave as your legacy? Bedford Falls or Pottersville? Would you stand with me? Here's the commitment I'm asking you to make this morning. To simply surrender to God and say, God, I completely surrender to you. Whatever you ask me to do, I will do. Whatever you ask me to do, I will do. Lord, the answer is yes. Now, what's the question? Just say that to the Lord right now. Father, work in and through us. You're not done. These people we looked at today are examples. They lived their lives and they made a difference. But you're not done using people to change the world. We've got a room full. Father, use them in their sphere of influence. Expand their sphere of influence. Bless them. Continue to work through them in ways that extends your kingdom. We commit ourselves to accomplishing your will. In Jesus' name we pray. Amen.